I feel I should perhaps return a moment to the question of his lordship's attitude to Jewish persons. In particular, let me clear up this matter of a supposed bar against Jewish persons on the staff of Darlington Hall. One really cannot guess the reason for these absurd allegations, unless, quite ludicrously, they originate from that brief, entirely insignificant few weeks in the early 30s when Mrs. Caroline Barnett came to wield an unusual influence over his lordship. Mrs. Barnett, the widow of Mr. Charles Barnett, was a very handsome, some might say glamorous lady. For much of the summer of 1932, she was a regular presence at Darlington Hall. And it was during those same weeks that those entirely untypical incidents took place. I call them incidents, but some of these were extremely minor. For instance, I recall overhearing at dinner, when a particular newspaper had been mentioned, his lordship remarking, "Oh, you mean that Jewish propaganda sheet?" And then, on another occasion, I remember his instructing me to cease giving donations to a particular local charity, on the grounds that the management committee was more or less homogeneously Jewish. Then came the afternoon his lordship called me into his study. He said, "I've been doing a great deal of thinking, Stevens, and I've reached my conclusion. We cannot have Jews on the staff here at Darlington Hall." "Sir?" "Tell me, Stevens, we have a few on the staff at the moment, don't we?" "I believe two of the present staff members would fall into that category, sir." "Ah." His lordship paused for a moment, staring out of his window. "Of course, you'll have to let them go. It's regrettable, Stevens, but we have no choice. It's in all our best interests." The two staff members were both housemaids. You will appreciate I was not unperturbed at the prospect of telling Miss Kenton I was about to dismiss two of her maids. Indeed, the maids had been perfectly satisfactory employees, and my every instinct opposed the idea of their dismissal. Nevertheless, my duty in this instance was quite clear. And so it was that, when I finally raised the matter that evening, I did so in as concise and businesslike a way as possible, concluding with the words, "I will speak to the two employees in my pantry tomorrow morning at 10:30. It was then that Miss Kenton said, "Mr. Stevens, I cannot quite believe my ears. Ruth and Sarah have been members of my staff for over 6 years now. They have served this house excellently. I am outraged that you can sit there and utter what you have just done, as though you were discussing orders for the larder. You are saying Ruth and Sarah are to be dismissed on the grounds that they are Jewish. Miss Kenton, I have just this moment explained the situation to you fully. But does it not occur to you, Mr. Stevens, that to dismiss Ruth and Sarah on these grounds would be simply wrong? I will not work in a house in which such things can occur. Miss Kenton, I am surprised to find you acting in this manner. I'm telling you, Mr. Stevens, if you dismiss my girls tomorrow, it will be a sin as any sin ever was one, and I will not continue to work in such a house. Miss Kenton, let me suggest to you that you are hardly well placed to be passing judgments of such a high and mighty nature, whereas his lordship is somewhat better placed to judge what is for the best. 10:30 tomorrow morning. Send the two employees concerned, please." Miss Kenton was extremely cold towards me for some days following the dismissal of the employees. But then, as week followed week, it became clear that there was no question of her leaving Darlington Hall. Eventually, of course, the matter came to be by and large forgotten. But I remember it coming up one last time, well over a year after the dismissal of the two maids. It was his lordship who initially revived the matter. By then, Mrs. Caroline Barnett's days of influence were well over. "Stevens," he had said to me, "I've been meaning to say to you about the Jewish maids. I suppose there's no way of tracing them now, is there? It was wrong what happened, and one would like to recompense them somehow." "I will certainly look into the matter, sir." I assumed this exchange with his lordship would be of some interest to Miss Kenton, and I decided it only proper to mention it to her, even at the risk of getting her angry again. I thus thought it opportune to relate what had taken place between myself and Lord Darlington. I proceeded to do so, and concluded by saying, What's done can hardly be undone, but it is a great comfort to hear his lordship declare so unequivocally that it was all a terrible misunderstanding. I just thought you'd like to know, Miss Kenton, since you were as distressed by the episode as I was. I'm sorry, Mr. Stevens, Miss Kenton said. I don't understand you. As I recall, you thought it was only right and proper that Ruth and Sarah be sent packing. Now, really, Miss Kenton, that is quite incorrect and unfair. The whole matter caused me great concern indeed. Then why, Mr. Stevens, did you not tell me so at the time? Do you realize, Mr. Stevens, how much it would have meant to me if you had thought to share your feelings last year? Do you realize how much it would have helped me? Why, Mr. Stevens, why do you always have to pretend? I gave a laugh at the ridiculous turn the conversation had suddenly taken. You're really, Miss Kenton, I said. Pretend? I suffered so much over Ruth and Sarah leaving us, and I suffered all the more because I believed I was alone. Oh, really, Miss Kenton? Naturally, one disapproved of the dismissals. One would have thought that quite self-evident. I excused myself and proceeded to make my exit. But I see I have become somewhat lost in these old memories. This had never been my intention, but I have at least avoided becoming unduly preoccupied with the events of this evening, for these last few hours have been rather trying ones. I find myself in the attic room of this small cottage belonging to Mr. and Mrs. Taylor. The fact that I am now here is attributable to one infuriatingly simple oversight. Namely, I allowed the Ford to run out of petrol. When I got out to assess my situation, I could see I had only a few more minutes of daylight left me. Beyond the crest of a field some way off in the distance was a small village. I walked back down to the Ford, where I packed a briefcase with some essential items, and then, arming myself with a bicycle lamp, I went in search of a path by which I could descend. By and by, I found myself on a paved path going down into the village, and it was while I descended the path that I met Mr. Taylor. I had explained my position, adding that I would be most gratified to be guided towards a good inn. At this, Mr. Taylor had shaken his head, saying, "Oh, I'm afraid there's no inn in our village. If you don't mind roughing it a little, sir, we could offer you a room and a bed for the night." Thus it was that I came to accept the kind hospitality of Mr. and Mrs. Taylor. But it was a relief indeed to be able to come up to this room and to spend some moments turning over these memories of Darlington Hall from all those years ago. Ever since the prospect of seeing Miss Kenton again first arose, I suppose I have tended to spend much time pondering just why our relationship underwent such a change. For change it certainly did, around 1935 or 1936. It seems possible that that odd incident the evening Miss Kenton came into my pantry uninvited may have marked a crucial turning point. That evening, I was not, in fact, engaged in professional matters. I had been enjoying a rare hour or so off duty. I certainly do recall her saying, "Really, Mr. Stevens, this room resembles a prison cell." I did not look up from my reading, and a few moments passed during which I waited for Miss Kenton to excuse herself and leave. But then I heard her say, "Now I wonder what it could be you are reading there, Mr. Stevens." I looked up to see Miss Kenton advancing towards me. I shut the book, and clutching it to my person, rose to my feet. "Really, Miss Kenton, I must ask you to respect my privacy." "But why are you so shy about your book, Mr. Stevens?" "I rather suspect it may be something rather racy." "Miss Kenton, I must ask you to leave me alone." "Please show me the volume you are holding," said Miss Kenton, continuing her advance, "and I will leave you to the pleasures of your reading." Then she was standing before me, and suddenly the atmosphere underwent a peculiar change. All I can say is that everything around us suddenly became very still. It was my impression that Miss Kenton's manner also underwent a sudden change. There was a strange, seriousness in her expression, and it struck me she seemed almost frightened. She reached forward and began, gently, to release the volume from my grasp, practically one finger at a time. The process seemed to take a very long time, until finally I heard her say, "Good gracious, Mr. Stevens, it isn't anything so scandalous at all. Simply a sentimental love story." I believe it was around this point that I decided there was no need to tolerate any more. I cannot recall precisely what I said, but I remember showing Miss Kenton out of my pantry quite firmly, and the episode was thus brought to a close. The book was, true enough, what might be described as a sentimental romance. There was a simple reason for my having taken to perusing such works. It was an extremely efficient way to maintain and develop one's command of the English language. Having said that, however, I do not mind confessing today that I did, at times, gain a sort of incidental enjoyment from these stories. Why should one not enjoy stories of ladies and gentlemen who fall in love and express their feelings for each other, often in the most elegant phrases? I do not mean to imply the stance I took over the matter of the book that evening was somehow unwarranted, but as to just how much that incident contributed to the large changes our relationship underwent, it is very difficult to say. There may have been other, more fundamental developments, such as the matter of Miss Kenton's days off. Miss Kenton's days off had followed a predictable pattern. She would, once every 6 weeks, take 2 days off to visit her aunt in Southampton, but then she began suddenly to take full advantage of her contracted time off, leaving no information other than the hour she might be expected back that night. I suppose this change did perturb me somewhat. I could not help noticing that Miss Kenton had started to get letters, on a fairly regular basis, from the same correspondent, and that these letters bore a local postmark. I did then venture to ask her one evening, during one of our regular sessions over cocoa, "And will you be going off again on Thursday, Miss Kenton? On your day off, I mean?" "Oh, Mr. Stevens, it's just someone I knew once when I was at Grantchester Lodge. He somehow learnt of my being here and started writing to me, suggesting we renew our acquaintance. And that, Mr. Stevens, is really the long and the short of it." It was not so long afterwards that these meetings over cocoa in her parlour came to an end. I was wishing to discuss with Miss Kenton a weekend gathering of distinguished persons from Scotland. On this particular evening, I had been discussing various aspects of it for a little while, when I realised Miss Kenton was contributing very little. I finally said to her, "I am sorry, Miss Kenton, but I see little point in our continuing. You simply do not appreciate the importance of this discussion." "I'm sorry, Mr. Stevens," she said, sitting up a little. "It's simply that I'm rather tired this evening." "You are increasingly tired now, Miss Kenton." To my astonishment, Miss Kenton responded to this in a sudden burst. "Mr. Stevens, I have had a very busy week. In fact, I have been wishing for my bed for the last 3 or 4 hours. "If that is how you feel about it, Miss Kenton, there is no need at all for us to continue with these evening meetings." "Oh, Mr. Stevens, I merely said..." "No, I mean it, Miss Kenton. In fact, I had been wondering for some time if we should not discontinue these meetings, given how they prolong our already very busy days." "Mr. Stevens, please, I believe these meetings are very useful, but they are inconvenient for you, Miss Kenton. They tire you out. May I suggest that from now on we simply make a special point of communicating important information during the course of the normal working day?" "Now, Miss Kenton, I apologize for keeping you up so long. Thank you very kindly for the cocoa.